Welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selena Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pavitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship, and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside. Hello and welcome to another Project Love podcast episode. It's Selena here today, and I am so excited for you to hear this week's episode. I was lucky enough to have Emma Gannon onto the podcast this week talking about her new book, Sabotage, How to Silence Your Inner Critic and Get Out of Your Own Way. Now, if you haven't heard of Emma before, then I am so delighted to be introducing you to her. I have been a huge fan of Emma's for years, ever since I started listening to her award-winning podcast, Control Out Delete. Emma is award-winning and best-selling in everything that she does. She's a Sunday Times best-selling author. Her books are Control Out Delete, The Multi-Hyphen Method, Olive, which came out this summer and is phenomenal, as is The Multi-Hyphen Method. I haven't yet read Control Out Delete. And Sabotage is another incredible book. So I got to talk to Emma about sabotage, about the many ways that we sabotage ourselves, about my experience of reading this book, which was truly powerful. And yeah, we just use it as an opportunity to really dive deep into the topic of sabotage and stepping out of our own way to create a life that we love and play the kinds of games we really want to be playing out in the world. I absolutely loved having this conversation with Emma, and I hope you get as much out of it as I did. So listen in and enjoy. It is such a joy to have you here today, holding our very colourful microphones.
I love it. And also, this is reminding me of when we met up to discuss the multi-hyphen method, like 2 years ago when we first met. So I feel like it's our anniversary.
I know. Oh my God. And wow, it's been absolutely incredible to watch you since then. I've always been an avid follower of your podcast, but getting to know you over that time, to see how just you as in your career, as a business, but as an artist, just the way you've just constantly reinventing and deciding, actually, I'm going to go this way now. And now, surprise, I'm going to go this way. I'm going to start off by saying huge congratulations for not just Sabotage, which we're going to be talking about today, but Olive. I mean, what a phenomenal novel. And isn't that two books in one quarter you've released into the world?
But to anyone listening, I have not written one word during lockdown. So it's one of those things where things are coming out at once, but I haven't sort of been overly productive this year, but that's okay.
That is okay, because now you're into the celebrating your babies being released into the world. Olive I talked about Olive and, you know, the whole child-free topic on the Project Love Instagram IGTV. It was the most popular IGTV we've ever done. It's such an important topic and one that isn't talked about. How has the response been to that?
It's been amazing. I do think, you know, with a topic like that, people can make judgments of it without reading it. So maybe people are thinking, am I on some sort of campaign trail for no one to have babies anymore? Which is absolutely not the case. It was meant to be a nuanced, quite loving book. And it's been really nice. I had someone comment the other day actually saying that she read Olive on her maternity leave. The first week of having a baby. And she was like, was it a weird choice? And she was like, it actually made me realize how much I've made the right decision in having a child. So it's not a book about one path. It's a book about many different paths. So
yeah,
it's been nice hearing lots of different women and their thoughts on it, really.
Yeah. For me, the big takeaway was that people need to be allowed to choose their own path in life. And all the kind of expectations of, you know, what your life should look like, what it is to be a successful woman, what it is to be a loving, caring woman. It's kind of challenging all of that. I also loved Olive. I know that you've talked before about Olive being a kind of slightly annoying character or...
Well, were saying, like, the main thing has been that people think she's immature and hasn't grown up. But it's a coming of age book and she's more mature by the end than she is in the beginning, which is the point of a book, or the point of a story and a narrative. But yeah, I really like her. I think I'd want to be friends with her.
I had a lot of time for Olive. I was just like, I would definitely hang out with Olive.
But it's interesting as well how much, I think what's happened with Olive, and fingers crossed it kind of continues because the paperback's coming out next year, which is another splash.
Yeah,
people have... I've been really hearing from a lot of people every day in my DMs, and I feel like it's a word of mouth movement.
Oh, 100%.
Because I don't feel like I'm overly promoting it anymore. I've stepped back, but I think people are WhatsApping their friends or telling their best friends, which is amazing. But they're saying, I feel less alone. Thank you. And I'm thinking, I feel less alone.
Yes.
Because I felt alone. That's why I wrote the book on the topic. So it's great. It's a two-way thing.
Amazing. And now you've gone and thrown yourself into something just completely different, which is talking about sabotage, how to silence your inner critic and get out of your own way. And what surprised me about this is how open and honest and vulnerable you were. I wasn't expecting it, because obviously I've read Multi-Hyphen Method and I love it. And you do talk about yourself and you do talk about your own experience, but not to this degree.
I know. This is like the behind the scenes of like, let me allow you in to actually what's really going on, I suppose.
So what made you decide to write a book about sabotage and be so open about your own experiences? I'm laughed out loud on quite a few occasions. I love the way you storytell, like your memoir writing is so good. And there were quite a few moments, but there was one about how you had, about particularly around dating when you were younger, and how you burped in some guy's face that you really fancied. And I was just like, oh my God, did that actually happen?
I know, because some of the book is quite serious and quite like deep, and I'm trying to get really kind of a bit worthy about the topic maybe. And then suddenly there's a chapter, yeah, about how I burped in someone's face. And then I sort of, it really takes you on a bit, maybe it surprises you, because one minute I'm serious and the next I like slip that in. But it was really fun to do the audiobook because I was a bit nervous about it, because I thought this is quite vulnerable. Sometimes you have a random producer. I had a guy I'd never met before, and it's really personal.
Yeah.
And actually he really enjoyed it, which was nice, but I didn't feel embarrassed. I didn't go like bright red or anything. I wasn't cringing. Yeah. I actually felt weirdly powerful, and that it was the most natural thing in the world for me to be talking so openly about this.
Yeah.
And I just felt like, you know, we talk about this all the time, but vulnerability really is an inner power. And I feel like there's nothing really left unsaid now in terms of I don't have anything to hide. And I don't know whether this year has weirdly, coincidentally, come at a weird time for the book coming out, a good time in a way, because I wrote it before the pandemic. Mm. But this year, I don't know if you agree, but I feel like the jig is up in terms of any sort of performance. I have no interest in pretending I'm okay anymore.
Yes, absolutely. And we talked about that. We've been talking about that a lot here on the podcast, but also we did these love-ins at the start during lockdown. We met up each week on Zoom with whoever wanted to from the Project Love community. And we said what was so wonderful was the first time no one is pretending they're fine, because we all know you're not.
Yeah.
No one's fine. How can anyone be fine with this? You and I were saying before we hit record that we're feeling really weird today. I just always feel like ghost town London. I was feeling really sad. I was just like, I want people aggressively shoving me out the way, because that's, you know, that was the old, it's just, it's all so different. There's just silence and quiet and a sort of subdued air. So yeah, absolutely. The jig is up. Like no one can pretend to just perform being happy and smiling all the time.
And when you write something, I think before a massive world-changing pandemic, you worry that it's not relevant anymore. And I had that moment with this book, and actually I reread it during, you know, the dark moments of lockdown. And I realized that actually self-sabotage isn't this dramatic, self-blamey term. It doesn't mean we are responsible for everything going wrong in our lives. It's just that in a world of external problems, in a world where actually there's so much against you, and that is dependent on your background and your path in life and how you were born, you know, there's so much out of our control that actually when it's all stripped away, the least we can do is be nice to ourselves.
Yes.
And the least we can do is be on our own side. And really this book is just how to not only get out of your own way, but just make things a little easier. So I think it's even more relevant in a way.
Absolutely. But what I love about sabotage is that so many self-help books are about the positives. It's about you can do it, you know, get out there and expand and grow and design a life you love. And obviously I love all these topics, but it's so wonderful actually to just dig into the shadow stuff, the stuff that's lurking in the shadows. Very challenging. And it's so funny because the first time you wrote your first version of Sabotage, which was with the Pound Project, and you put it out there, you said, I'm writing about sabotage and the way we sabotage ourselves. And it prompted us to do an episode on here about upper limiting, which you talk about in Sabotage. And I said, and I said in it, because I was listening to it actually this weekend, I said, this has been like prompted by Emma Gannon writing about Sabotage. And when she said she was writing about it, I was like, oh, well, I don't do that much anymore. And as I started thinking about it, I was like, it's not a question of when I do it. It's a question of when don't I do it? And I suddenly realized, as soon as I started thinking about it, I realized I do it everywhere. So reading this book shone a light on all the many ways I sabotage myself in tiny little subtle ways. And so going through it, it really triggered me. At certain moments, I was like, oh, this is making me so, like that anger that comes from resistance to not wanting to hear this, like that ego part of me that's just like, just put the book down, just stop listening to this. It was so surprisingly powerful. And also it's a beautifully sized book that meant I got to read it twice. So the first time I literally experienced it working as a tool to shine a light on my sabotaging ways. And then I read through it again, having gone through that. And it's just, yeah, it's just brilliant. It's
which,
so full of wisdom.
Which parts of it did you have that reaction to? Because that's really, really interesting, because I went through that myself. And I suppose writing about it, I had some distance from that, but I've had that feeling.
I think it's going to be so interesting, because I think different people will have different sections will be really like hit home. And also I definitely know that there are different times in my life I used to sabotage so badly in relationships and my love life. Like I sabotaged successfully for 8 years of ever getting, you know, close to having a relationship. So there will be sections we talked about, you know, you talk about that. But I think the one for me was about sabotaging yourself to appear smaller and therefore more likable. And I was like, fuck. I literally was like, oh my God. You know that feeling if you've been found out? And it's like, oh no. I don't know if I want to keep reading this. And but it was so interesting.
I've noticed it so much in my life where I have got more confident over time and I have noticed how much people don't like it. There's a lot of people who would prefer it if you were the way you were before.
Mm.
And there's a lot about friendships and relationships in the book. I wanted to make sure it wasn't just about art or creativity, even though I touch on that in the book and it's sort of very much inspired by Big Magic and those types of books. But God, the way that we sabotage ourselves with who we hang out with and who we let in.
Completely.
And for me, the real centerpiece of the book is we sabotage ourselves by wanting to be in control the whole time.
Yes.
We'd rather not go on the date. We'd rather not do the side project. We'd rather not put something on Instagram because we'd rather be in control. And I just think it's such a fallacy that we even could be in control. Like, of course we're not in control.
Yeah, but we like to pretend, like we like to give ourselves the illusion that we are, and sabotage is a way we can control things. And yeah. So the one for me now, it's definitely that one is you say historically women have been deemed more likable when keeping themselves to themselves and not taking up much room. Wow. She loves herself is usually said with a sneer, when actually it should be, wow, she loves herself. And that was like this, I put not only an earmark, but a heart on it to extra emphasize, but there's definitely the bit about the people you choose in your life can be sabotaging. If I'd read that in my early 30s, that would have been the one that would have been the massive wake-up call. And I think what was interesting though, I think as I read it, what it triggered in me was I did go into a bit of a freak out, like, oh my God, I'm ruining things for myself left, right, and center. And it's, and like you say, it's just like, this is not don't turn this now into a blame game.
No,
you know, of like exactly. Blaming yourself. It's just, it's like, you know, Liz Gilbert says in Big Magic, fear is part of the journey. You don't ever get to a point where fear isn't there. So it's like, become friends with that sabotaging side. And now and again, also, I do notice that something in me will sabotage things to kind of wake me up and show me. And I think you do say that in the book as well. Sometimes it's to show you that that's not quite the right way.
That's all it is. I think knowing the tools to identify what you're sabotaging is literally all that is just knowing it, what direction you want to be going in. Because I think, like you said at the beginning of the podcast, they're tiny, these things that we do. Yeah. They're actually not noticeable. So I think once you read the book, you know you're doing it. That's when you're really in your power to change. You know, there's a bit in the book where I talk about procrastination, which on its own is fine. Procrastination is actually amazing for creativity. You go for the walk, be bored, switch off your phone, procrastinate. That's fine. That's not a bad thing. You're not a bad person if you procrastinate. That's because that's been the message. It's when you're procrastinating so much that it's taking you away from who you want to be. So it's taking like a tiny thing, which is not going on the holiday or, you know, not taking the risk in your job or not hanging out with that guy that you really like. It's like, well, all of those tiny moments over like 10 years, you've actually not become the person you want to be. And I think that's what it's about, is taking the tiny things, adjusting them, and actually then you're just away on a path you're meant to be on.
And just bringing awareness to it
and
just recognizing, those little tiny things that you do. You talked about, like, you know, drinking too much the night before an important interview.
Well, as well, like this is the psychology of it I've learned, is that we'd rather mess it up on purpose than mess it up.
Yeah.
And that's a huge thing that I talk about in the book. I used to do it when I was younger. I'd, you know, splodge on a painting and be like, well, it's ruined now.
I love that story. And
I do it still. I'm like, well, yeah, I messed up that meeting, but I was a bit hungover, so it's fine. So I'm making excuses for myself that I've got a get out of jail free card, when actually, why can't I just risk a bit of humiliation or a bit of rejection? Like, we will get through that. Why do we have to have some excuse behind it that we meant to mess it up? And I think it all comes down to fear. It's just a book about fear, basically. And also how we're trying to defend and save ourselves. Like I talk about in the book, how self-sabotage is not us trying to ruin ourselves. It's actually us trying to protect ourselves.
Yeah.
And so we need to make peace with it and be kind about it.
Yeah. And and there is a quote by me.
There is.
About having compassion. Actually don't know where it is, but that's, and I think am I mentioned twice in it?
You are. Yeah, you what say something exactly along those lines, that
we have to
it's
have
not out to get
that.
Us. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, I think sometimes there is a darker side to it, like the wanting us to play small and stay in our box. And I think that is also, it's not just coming from within, that's coming from outside of us as well, that pressure of like, to be a likable, particularly a woman, you don't want to appear to love yourself too much, because it's said as an insult, isn't
exactly
it?
And a lot of it is external, because there was something I learned about self-sabotage that really helped me, is that we sabotage ourselves sometimes because of our past selves or memories or what people have told us about ourselves that isn't even true. There's a really random example I guess I can give now, which is I haven't driven a car for about 10 years because when I was 18, people used to kind of mock me a bit and be like, oh, woman driver, can't reverse, you know, jokes in my family, but those jokes have turned into me thinking I can't drive, which has led to me not driving. And if I sit down and think, is that true?
Yes.
Because it's actually not true. It's something that I took from years of jokes and have internalized it. And now I'm sabotaging myself. I can't blame it on them anymore. I'm now sabotaging myself by not driving. So I think sometimes you have to unpick where these thoughts are coming from. Like, what are they? What's the root of this thought?
Yeah. What's the narrative that I've decided about myself that's now sticking myself in this kind of limited position? And so throughout, at the end of each chapter, I think you have little kind of basically coaching tips for people to do, which you are so good at. There was one in particular around this topic where you said, to go out and have a go at disproving something that you've believed, you've told yourself to be true about you, that's kind of a limiting belief. Go out and, like, you know, what could you do to prove it not to be true? Which is, yeah, it's, and actually that was a really key question for me. I was just like, yes, of course. Why have I been telling myself this limiting narrative? And obviously I do this stuff in my coaching with people, but there's something about sabotage. It's different to, I talk about the shitty committee and the inner critic, but there's a sabotage. It's a deliberate tripping yourself up. Like, it's so interesting.
It's fascinating because it's also not a simple equation.
No.
We can sabotage sometimes because we want something so much that we will want to throw up. We will sabotage because we're so scared actually of our own success.
What if
this thing is really successful? Oh, that means I'm going to be visible. That means that people are going to know who I am. That means people are going to read my book. So you're sabotaging because you're scared. But there's also another way that we sabotage. And it's kind of up to us, I guess, to dig around and see what route we're going. But the other way is that we're sabotaging because something is not right. And it's actually, you're doing yourself a favor.
Yeah.
So for example, you're sabotaging moving house. That's actually because deep down you want to stay.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's so many reasons why we do it. But the reason why I really wanted to write this book is because my previous book, The Multi-Hyphen Method, was very much like, here are the tools, here are the podcast episodes, here are the online courses, here is the technology, here is everything you need. And then I was like, but why haven't I sort of gone to the root of the problem? Because you can have all of the tech and all of the tools, but if you're sabotaging yourself, that's where you need to start.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because this is the thing that gets in the way of people actually going and daring to follow their dreams and daring to give things a go. Obviously, there are outside, you know, forces as well that don't necessarily make things difficult for us.
Yes.
But this, the part we do have control over, back to that desire for control, is where we're sabotaging ourselves and tripping ourselves up. But yeah, it's very nuanced. So you do have to dig around and say, okay, why might I want to have tripped myself up there?
Yeah.
Is it me saying, hey, wake up, you need to see there's a new direction you need to go in and it's not this one? Or is it that upper limiting, that fear of, oh, I'm not, there was a limit to where I thought I was allowed to go and we've kind of reached it, which is what Gay Hendricks and Upper Limit, you know,
yes,
the Big Leap is all about. And that's the stuff that I come up against, the playing small,
me too.
This is it. But at the same time, I want to play a big game because I want to be of service and I want to, that expansiveness is in me wanting to grow out. And each time it comes to a new like layer of that expansive onion, I hit another self-sabotaging moment. It's so weird. You can get your body in on it as well.
That is fascinating.
It's
because I think I mentioned Marie Forleo in the book, and she says that she gets ill time she's about to take on a new project, like a huge life career changing project. And her doctor is like, there isn't actually anything wrong with you. And it is fascinating. And I don't know why we do it, but I'd love it if we could all crack it a bit, because like you say, there is enough things getting in our way. And as we know from this year, there are more obstacles for women of color than there are for me. There are more obstacles for people, you know, who don't have parents who can help them out financially. You know, this is such a layered conversation, and I don't think everyone is in the same camp or from a starting point of level. So yeah, it is not about, oh, it's your fault that blah, blah, blah. It's literally just a terminology to say you're going to have people tripping you up. So don't trip yourself up.
Yeah. And I mean, for example, you know, we're in a huge global pandemic. That's sabotaging quite a lot for people this year and will continue to on so many levels. So there is that. But then it's looking at, okay, but then is there any part here that I'm also holding myself back?
Yeah.
Did you find writing this book really was quite transformative for you in terms of your own sabotaging habits?
Yes. I feel I'm not going to say I'm like completely cured from it. It's not even a thing to be cured from, but
we never will.
Never.
Be.
No. It's an ongoing maintenance, but I wouldn't actually call myself someone that sabotages myself anymore.
Mm.
Like that's how much this book has helped me, because even though there's bits from me making jokes about burping in people's faces, the main content of it as well is from psychologists and therapists and behavioral, psychologists who have given me the tools to get over my own sabotage. And now I'm sharing the book to others and saying, this is what I've done, because I use the tools all the time now.
Do you?
One of the psychologists in the book, Professor Vin Walsh, he was saying, he explained to me about the sunk cost fallacy, which I'm sure loads of people already know about, but I never knew about, the sunken cost fallacy, it's called.
Yes,
which is when you make up excuses for a bad situation, basically. And, you know, it's a tricky subject because I don't find it useful when you have people going, yeah, making excuses, you know, it's your fault. That's not helpful. But he was quite tough love in his approach, which is, we make up excuses all the time for ourselves, which we don't for others. So, for example, if your best friend is in a job that she hates, you probably will think, get out of that job. Come on, you can do it. Whereas if it's you, you think, no, you'll make all these kind of justifications.
Yes.
Whereas externally, we can see the problem in other people, but we can't see it in ourselves. And he explained to me as well that the sunken cost fallacy is when you don't want to waste away anything that you've previously put effort into. So say you've written a novel, which actually you don't want to publish anymore. You'll keep going at it because you don't want to waste it. Or say you're in a relationship you've been in for 10 years and it's actually really harmful for you. You'll stay in it because... and people do this all the time with their careers.
Oh,
so if someone has been a lawyer for 15 years, they'll say, but I can't throw away 15 years.
Throw that all away and start from scratch, yeah.
But you're not throwing anything away, because what you've done, and all you're doing is trying something new. So that I always think about.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So holding on to things, even though it's not no longer making you happy.
And I'm sure it comes up a lot in friendships, because I've definitely had that where I'm like, well, I've been friends with them for this amount of time. So therefore, you know, I can't distance myself from them. And you think, well, friendships change, people change.
I'm like, yeah, you talk about a friendship in here again.
Yeah.
I was amazed. I was like, wow. It made me think of, and I wonder if, you know, this will make a lot of people think of, wow, would I talk about that relationship with that friend that I had that, you know, we kind of almost broke up. I wonder if I would ever have the courage to actually put that in a book.
Well, I've got to say, and I suppose it's helpful for people writing books to know the process sometimes, that friend in the book is actually a merge of a few situations.
Oh, really?
Because I wouldn't want to write about someone in that detail.
Okay, interesting.
And I did it a bit in my first book, which was a memoir, where I merged people because, and also legally, like I don't want to air my dirty laundry in my books. I just don't, but I want to use things as examples.
Mm.
And so I can kind of, it's not fabricated, but it's a merge of a few different things. So it's not about one person, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you know, I haven't read your first book. I was thinking this, I was just like, why have I not read it? So that's next on my list. I'm very excited. Just looking at your career, all these different books that you've written, and you play a big game. It's so amazing to watch, like the guests you get on the podcast. I feel like you're someone who, it's so interesting you wrote a book on sabotage, because I would have thought you don't sabotage yourself much at all, because you do step out into the world. But I suppose the more you put yourself out there, the more that desire to sabotage it must be something you actually have to battle with.
Yes.
People who play small all the time and don't put themselves out there at all. So actually, I've literally just answered my own question. It makes total sense that you would know sabotage so well because you do play such a big game. Do you consciously feel like you play a big game, or did it just come naturally to you?
Well, I think what I wanted to touch on in the book is that imposter syndrome for me has got worse, not better.
That makes sense.
And I just found that quite baffling, because I don't need to be an imposter anymore. I've literally written 4 books. Like, I can look at my work and say, you've done this. This is what you've done. You're not pretending. and yet the imposter syndrome is louder. And I just wanted to unpick that, because when I was 21 and I worked in kind of creative agencies and I had a blog and I was like the young millennial who like knew loads about the internet. And I remember my boss being like, do you want to go and do a talk? And it was actually in Istanbul, and it was like my first trip abroad and for work, and it was really exciting. And I marched onto that stage and I just did my talk. I thought I was the bee's knees. And then I went home to my hotel and ordered room service, didn't think anything about it. Where is she?
Well, I mean, but that is the
and I should have been an imposter. I should have had imposter syndrome. I didn't know anything. And what's interesting is, yeah, I'm 31 now. I feel like I've got a bit of a portfolio of evidence that I know stuff, and I'm harder on myself. So I think it was unpicking that and just realizing that, again, be kind to yourself and find ways of getting some sort of inner belief going on that doesn't need to be loud, doesn't need to be really overly confident. It just needs to be quite quiet. And I found that now. I found that sort of place that I can go where I sort of think you have got this.
Do you think that increased imposter syndrome and sort of losing that confidence, that brazen confidence of your early 20s, but do you think that's because putting yourself out there and being visible is scary, because people really do you kind of see you now as an open like space to go and be mean and say stuff and tell you what they really think? And have you experienced that? Do you think that's sort of knocked your confidence a bit, that then it's like, oh, hold on, not everyone is nice? I don't know. I just kind of
weirdly, it's not necessary. It's not always that, because what I've realized is no comment from any troll isn't something I've already thought. If someone says your book's not very good and I don't like your dress and your hair looks a bit funny today, I've already thought those things. I thought them first. So I think what it is actually just getting to a place where you don't say those things to yourself.
Yeah.
And so those voices who try and drag you down feel alien to you, rather than, oh yeah, I know, I do look bad today.
That's interesting. So now are you just like, oh,
I'm like,
odd.
Well, I don't
that's
agree.
Odd.
I'm like, I don't agree. I think it's great.
Well, obviously that brazen confidence of your 20s is coming back, but in a grounded,
in a different
nourished
way.
Kind of, yeah, in a rooted way.
But also in a mature way, because I'm exactly. not closed off from criticism. I actually really embrace it now. Mm. I find it interesting. I don't find it, and this is something I've wanted to work on for a long time, is defensiveness. I was very defensive for a long time. And I think, you know, even this year with Black Lives Matter, defensiveness is coming up as a topic.
Oh,
we
yeah.
need to stop being defensive. You know, that's not my natural reaction anymore. When someone says anything, I lean into it. And I think that's just growth as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Being open to it.
Yeah.
Being curious about it, rather than taking it to mean that there's something innately wrong and failed about you.
Totally.
God, it's such an interesting topic. It's just, yeah, honestly, reading it, I mean, I would take a little weekend to read through it and let it unravel you.
Oh, wait, but I'm hoping that though it's confronting, I feel like the message of the book is only kind of kindness and being gentle, because sabotage is quite a strong word. And I think without reading the book, you could think, oh, is this a book about how I just ruin my life?
No, because it is how to silence your inner critic and get out of your own way. But that's, you know, the fact that I found it triggering, the fact that it unraveled me shows the power of the book. Like that's got real transformational quality to it. That's amazing. So, and by the end of it also, you do kind of like pick the reader up and you're like, okay, dust you off, like
off you
you're
go.
Fine. Now let's like get out there, go and live that life, go and grab it. The saboteur is going to be there with you. You're fine. Like you've got some tools. You're fabulous just as you are. Off you go. That was the kind of vibe of it. And I was like, okay, great. So now I'm going to do is I'm going to read it through again. And this time not in a kind of state of unraveling. And it's wonderful, because it is sort of, well, not pocket sized, but it's a smaller book, which as I saw, I was like, oh, what a relief. Like, this is great. I can read this more than once, which actually with a book like this, I think is really important. What's brilliant with it is that next time I'm like, right, I'm ready to take on a new game or a bigger game or step things up to the next level, particularly, you know, in business. And I feel that sort of, you know, wobbliness. I just read through this.
Oh, that's so good to know. Because I do think that we collect things as we go along. And I am someone who definitely listens to a podcast episode that has resonated with me a lot of times. Mm. There's actually a TED Talk interview podcast episode with Liz Gilbert, where she talks about living in sort of a magical world. And she was like, I don't really want to be in the real world. I like living in my kind of enchanted creative world. And every time I sit down to write something, I listen to it. And I think there's a power in rereading things so that it drills it in.
Yes.
And I do think the smaller format is quite good for that. So I hope it is just something in your handbag, maybe, that you can be like, oh God, I need to read this again.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what's weird is, and I don't know if this says something weird about me, but I reread it recently and needed to hear it again.
I think that speaks volumes for the power of this book. I think if you need to read your own book, if it's like that, even though you know all the words, the words came out of you, the fact that you need to reread it and use it as a tool yourself is just like, yeah, shows the power of it. And it's, but what's so amazing is just the way you just, I'm going to write a novel now and actually talk about that in Sabotage.
Yes, I do. And I didn't want to be self-indulgent with like, woe is me and my novel, because I know that in the grand scheme of the world, there's other bigger issues than me and my novel. But I just wanted to, for anyone out there kind of wanting a real example of what fear looks like with creativity, very nearly didn't write it. And I very nearly kind of cancelled all my relationships in the book world because I was so scared. Like, I rang my agent and was like, don't want to do it anymore. Call the whole thing off. And she rang me a week later and she's like, are you okay? Because that, and I explain it in the book, it was an out of body experience where I was watching myself. I don't know if you ever have this. I have it when I'm a massive dick to someone. It's like an out of body experience. And I'm like, Emma, why are you doing that? But I can't stop it. And so I watched myself tear down and burn my bridges because I was scared. And now I just think how interesting that we literally live in a fight or flight all the time.
Yeah.
And yes, our fear isn't, there's a lion over there that's going to eat us, but it is, oh God, my dream career is there.
Yeah.
And it's staring at me and I want to run away from it.
And I think, yeah, and it is so much part of the creative process. And I see the creative process in things like writing a book, but in creating your life, like going after any dream, that is this, you know, very similar creative process. But yeah, in writing my book on burnout, I definitely had a sabotage moment. And I think every writer does. I said to you, do meltdowns always happen when you write books? You're like, yeah, it's a good sign it's happening. It's always like, you know,
yeah,
it's a good sign.
It is. And I talk a little bit about my personal life in the book, but I tried to push away Paul, who I'm getting married to next year. Somehow he's stayed with me. You know, it was like a series of tests. It was far can I push you away? What is that about? And I think a lot of people do that.
Absolutely.
But I did it, you know, I've done it in my career and I've done it in my personal life. I push it away as a kind of test that, you know, if it's meant to be, it will happen. And I just think, why are we doing that to ourselves? It makes everything more complicated. Mm. I didn't need to push them away. And it's just fear.
That's so interesting. And I'm sure we test life like that in other ways as well. Like, if it was meant to be, it would have happened. So it's,
and if
just
I was
like,
meant to get the job, then I'll get it on a massive hangover.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing to do with that. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yet again, you've brought such an interesting topic out into the world for people to really sink their teeth into and discuss. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And yeah.
Thank you so much. That means so much because, you know, I mean, I've quoted you about a million times in the book, so you already know a lot about this and I learn a lot from you. So for you to have got something from it, it really means a lot.
Well, congratulations. What a celebration. It's brilliant. Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoy this episode. And if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say, best podcast ever. Thank you.